scores! Gilmore scores! The ball, three left!
Off the glass, in left corner to Aguila. Aguila to the left circle. Passing to Yell, a shot. Save made by Aguila. Rebound, another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts!
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg and Wes Gilbertson.
Okay, let's get it going. It's Friday. It's a Friday, February 21st, and we are underway this hour on Flames Talk with Wes Gilbertson of Post Media. My name is Pat Steinberg on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, wherever you get your podcasts, and that's it. Of course, live right here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Those are the mediums that you can get us here on Flames Talk. What's up, Wes? How we doing?
We're good, buddy. How are you?
Oh, you know, two thumbs up. Happy Friday. If you're listening on a Friday, hopefully everything is going well. If you're listening on Saturday morning, thanks for hanging out with us on the podcast. You know you can always subscribe to the Flames Talk podcast. Always available there. And the text line open for you throughout the program if you're listening live at 960. Lots to get to this hour. And now the Four Nations face-off is officially over. And we're now looking ahead to the restart of the 24-25 NHL season. Four Nations face-off ends Thursday with the right result. I know that for many of us, the most engaged we've been in an international hockey game in quite some time. It really was a great week. Like, a great tournament, a great event, and way more investment from, I think, people everywhere than most would have expected or most were expecting going into an event that has never been held before and will never be held again. Essentially what I know they called it the Four Nations face-off, but it was another World Cup of hockey, just a small World Cup of hockey, just the four teams. That's essentially what it was. But I wanted to kick off the hour hearing from the one Flames player who went to the Four Nations face-off. That's Rasmus Anderson. He spoke to us for, better part of 12 minutes.
Yeah, very engaged. It was very, like, you could tell what it meant to him.
He was still buzzing, hey?
And I wondered, and I'll just jump in here before you tee up the audio, but, I sort of wondered, Rasmus Anderson is a scratch for Sweden in their opener against Canada. He's a scratch again for them against Finland. And I think I caught myself wondering, I wonder if Raz wishes he was on a beach somewhere. I wonder if this is going to sort of sour the experience for him being, a spectator for Sweden's first two games. And just hearing him talk about the practices and talk about that one game against the Americans he did get into and the positive feedback he received to the coach or from the coach, and maybe what that could mean for 2026. I walked away from that media scrum today. I'm sure you did the same, thinking there was absolutely nowhere he would have rather been.
Yeah.
And a few days ago, you talk about the way the sort of tournament picked up steam. I think, man, this thing couldn't have gone any better. And Rasmus Anderson was one of the guys who I wondered if he'd kind of look back on and say, didn't get to play a lot. And absolutely the opposite, wasn't it?
Yeah, agreed. And I think we're only going to play a little bit, just a kind of brief snippet of him chatting with us earlier on Friday. Flames held a off-ice workout at the Dome, and then they're back on the practice ice Saturday at Winsport. But I thought listening to Raz was just more underlining of how successful an event this was. It was successful monetarily, the NHL, NHLPA making lots of money off of it. So it was a success from a television rating standpoint on both sides of the border, millions upon millions of people watching, I think more than ESPN and Sportsnet were expecting.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was from a player standpoint, you hear the players talking about it.
Yeah.
I think that this was a rousing success in that regard as well.
Just personally, speaking for myself, and I'm curious if you'd agree, I wound up caring more about this tournament than I could have possibly imagined.
Agree,
I would going into it.
Yep, agree 100%.
It didn't feel silly until they wanted them to skate around and lift that trophy kind of like it was the Stanley Cup. I mean, that's after the overtime goal. And,
yeah,
you know, the guys who you could tell the guys who hadn't won the Stanley Cup were especially sort of sheepish about the idea that they'd raise this thing up high. But that, like, that was the first moment when I was sort of reminded it wasn't an Olympics. Like, this thing felt like those guys were going to go through a wall for it.
When I was watching Canada-Sweden, and Raz didn't play in that game, but the opening game of the event, watching Canada-Sweden, and, MacKinnon scored, like, in the first minute to make it 1-0, and Canada's got the 3-1 lead. Sweden comes all the way back. They're playing 3-on-3 overtime. I'm not even in the city. I'm in another country. I'm in San Diego watching the game with my brother. You're like, holy,
yeah.
This thing has got way more juice
right.
than I was ever expecting, and that dialed me in immediately. And the next game, U.S. Finland, was the same way. Obviously, Saturday between Canada and the United States was off the charts with all that went down. It was a really neat event, right?
It just continued to build and build. Obviously, the way that Canada U.S. game started, but just the intensity in all of those games. Like Rasmus Anderson talked today about that game against the U.S. and tried,
which meant nothing.
But you never would have known that, would you?
Yep.
And so, you know, to build to the crescendo and of course, you know, with the orange, with that orange fellow spouting off with the sort of nonsense he has been, it just built up to, I sat there last night absolutely glued to it.
Yep.
And I knew I'd want to watch it, but the investment, I think I speak for literally millions of people. I did not expect myself to care that much about that hockey.
Last thing I'll say before we hear from Rasmus, who again, I think just underlines how big a deal it was for everyone. There are certain events and I'm like, no, I'm not going to a bar to watch. I want to watch the game. And you go to a bar to enjoy the atmosphere. I wanted to make sure I was dialed on that game and didn't miss anything and was watching intently. And you don't do that with 200 other people at a sports bar or at a bar that, you know, like to me, it was like, I want to make sure that I'm dialed on this game. I'm less concerned about the event of it all. This is an important game.
Our kitchen at home looked like we just had a party. It was like finish dinner, leave all the dishes where they are. We'll deal with those in a few hours. We have hockey to watch.
This was Rasmus Anderson Friday morning. His thoughts on his experience at the Four Nations face-off with Sweden.
It was awesome. It was great. It was kind of surreal at moments, and it was just awesome. Everything around it, the setup, and you know, just the first practice too. You looked around, and you saw all the skill in the world, and you know, making plays you haven't seen in a long time, and. So it was awesome, and it was great all around.
Did you have to get in to leave feeling like, okay, this was really...
Like to get in? Like,
yeah.
I mean, the thing is, like, you're obviously disappointed not playing, but at the same time, you can't be too disappointed, right? Like, it's, you know, you got to find a way to bring energy otherwise. And, you know, the first name that kind of popped in my head was, you know, be a little bit of a Lomberg out there, you know, bring energy in a different way. And so that's what I tried to do the first two games, and then finally got in the last game. And, you know, I thought I played pretty well, and, you know, had a long talk with the coach after, and he seemed to really enjoy the way I played. And so, you know, you leave on a good note, even though as a team we didn't reach ultimate goal. But from a personal level, you know, you leave there feeling good about yourself.
You've answered this question lots, but now that you've been to Four Nations, what would 2026 Olympics mean to you?
I mean, a lot, right? That's the, you know, first and foremost, you want to make the playoffs here, and, you know, we're going to have a hell of a push here last, what is it?
27
games left, and you know, that's the ultimate goal, but, you know, in the back of your head somewhere, it's that Olympics, and you know, it's kind of in a place where I grew up a little bit too. You know, we lived in Lugano for 4 years growing up, and that's, you know, 45 minutes from Milano. So that would be, you know, even more special for me and my family to go back there. You know, my brother lived there. He just got traded this year, but he lived there for a few years, and he loves the area, and so, you know, that's the ultimate goal. But, you know, I'm just trying to bring the, you know, what I kind of learned over this, 10 days, and bring it to the team here. And as I said, just have a hell of a push, and then just take it from there.
That's Rasmus Anderson. Just a little bit of his chat with us. He got back after like a 13-hour travel day, got back on Thursday, and then was there for the off-ice workout and whatever they were doing at the Dome on Friday. And I love the question you asked there at the end about the Olympics, because that becomes fascinating. Because to me, what I thought was maybe the most important side benefit of this event was that now it has conditioned general managers, conditioned players, conditioned media, conditioned fans, everyone to, hey, you know what? There's going to be another 2-week break in the season next year, and this one's going to be even a little bit different because you're going to be seeing guys playing hockey in Milan, Italy, and now it's the Olympics, and it's the first time in 12 years that NHL players will be taking part in the hockey tournament at the Olympic Games. For me, in my opinion, like there's nothing like it. There is nothing like those round robin games and those medal round games at an Olympic Games with NHLers involved. It's hockey that you just don't see. The level of hockey that is played is just, it's at a completely different level. And that's no disrespect to the Stanley Cup Finals and all that type of stuff. I think that there's a difference in terms of physicality and intensity of the NHL playoffs compared to the Olympic Games, but it's this unicorn 2 weeks of the highest level hockey that you're going to see, because it truly is best on best. And I just, that last part where you could tell, like, Rasmus was buzzing talking about the potential to go play for his country at the Olympics. That's kind of the coolest part of this on top of anything else, is that in a year's time, we'll be talking about this again with even more NHL superstars taking part in an event in Italy.
Well, and I think, you know, it's not lost on anybody, and certainly not lost on Rasmus Anderson, how much of an audition for the Olympic Games this was. And, you know, Anderson's a smart guy. And when you're sitting in the press box at the Four Nations face-off and Sweden's going to be taking seven defensemen to the Olympics, you're thinking to yourself, okay, this is good for me to know. I'm right now, I'm number seven, right? I'm number seven of seven. And even the game he got in, while it wasn't initially going to be that way because of some illness, Sweden dressed all seven defensemen. So he's looking, and we've talked plenty in the lead up to this with Anderson going about how stacked Sweden's blue line is. He's talking today about how cool it was to watch Erik Karlsson and to watch Hedman. You know, he's out there with Brodin and with Ekholm and Gustav Forsling. Like, that blue line is stacked, and he's looking at that thinking, okay,
yep.
How am I going to stay in the seven? And I just think, whether we're talking about Rasmus Anderson, you know, whether we're talking about Mackenzie Weegar, who I think now has an even tougher climb to get in the Olympic mix, I'm sorry, because of what Thomas Harley did. Like, would this tournament, I don't know that I thought I'd be making my own sort of Olympic decisions based on what I saw in this supposed to be meaningless tournament, and yet I absolutely would be.
It was great.
Start of next season factors into it, right?
Yep.
You know, if there's a, forget about the Swedish defenseman for a few minutes, you know, if Connor Zary has 20 goals at the Olympic break next year, people are going to be talking about him. Whoever, pick your name.
Yep.
It's not that you can't play your way into the mix, but I think we just saw the sort of most obvious Olympic auditions that we've ever seen with NHLers go to the Olympics. And that made it pretty darn cool too.
And for the, you know, don't mix politics and sports people. Unfortunately
they're mixed.
We didn't have anything to do with, Wes nor I or anybody else. And you know me, I am as loath to bring politics into this program as anybody, and maybe to a fault sometimes, because I really believe that this is talking about the Calgary Flames is a situation where, you know, maybe we can be distracted from whatever's happening elsewhere, but I'm sorry, Bill Guerin and Noah Hanifin and like these people, but like the players brought politics into it. We didn't. So now we're just supposed to ignore that all of a sudden it became a political powder keg on top of everything else? No. So like beat it, the don't bring politics. It was brought into it by the players and we don't ignore it. Like it was there. It was on the nose. We didn't have to read between the lines in terms of the political implications. And as I'll read this, I mean, we know what province we're in. We know what city we're in. Like we know that there is there's
province is an important word there.
Very true. But like this is a very politically right leaning province, and that is what it is. And we can talk. We don't talk about that on this program. But like politics was brought into this, and all of a sudden this became a whole lot. It felt a whole lot more than just a Four Nations face-off game, right? And that wasn't Pat or Wes or anybody else who did that other than the American team brought politics into this when it didn't need to be. So don't get on us for bringing politics into sports. The team that Canada beat on Thursday night, that's the team that brought politics into this.
And listen, you're... Everyone's entitled to their politics, you know, whether you think some of the things that have been tossed around are good ideas or bad ideas or horrible ideas or however you describe it, it's totally up to you. I'm entitled to think it was, you know, quite special that Noah Hanifin had such a great view of the game-winning goal.
I have no ill will towards Noah
Hanifin from his time in Calgary, but I thought it was nice to see him in the frame. Little TV time.
Yep. It was great. Adam Fox being the other one.
Yeah, why not?
I had no problem with that.
I got no problem with it either.
I thought it was actually quite great. A couple of guys who forced their way out of Calgary. I was like, you know what? Take a couple of overtime minuses there. There's nothing wrong with that. As Lou would say, go polish your silver medal. Steinberg and Wes along with you on this hour of Flames Talk. Lots of news surrounding the group right now, surrounding the Flames, that is. And we will get back into some Four Nations stuff and start looking ahead to the Olympics on the Daily Flames Roundtable later on this hour. But lots of news surrounding the group. Just a couple of things to touch on. As we kind of talked about, Yan Kuznetsov does go back to the Wranglers. So he'll be with the Wranglers on this upcoming road trip that starts on Saturday against Coachella Valley. So Yan Kuznetsov sent back to the Wranglers, but Ilya Solovyov stays up. Kevin Ball inevitably going to be activated off of IR here prior to Sunday's game against San Jose. But with no disrespect to Kuznetsov, and I know that you asked Ryan Huska about him after at the Avail on Friday, but Solovyov's the guy that should be staying up, and Kuznetsov's knocking on the door and will almost certainly be the next guy that they bring in if they have to. But I'm happy that Solovyov stays up and he'll be one of the eight. Tyson Berry's been sent to the American League after clearing waivers on Friday as well.
Yeah, Ilya Solovyov, and we've repeated it plenty of times this week, but Ilya Solovyov with his performance in his one NHL game so far, and that being the last before the Four Nations break, he earned another opportunity. And Flames GM Craig Conroy did what he had to do to clear an opportunity, to clear a roster spot with Tyson Berry being waived and ultimately assigned to the Wranglers. I just want to hit on the Kuznetsov part of it because I think some people saw him get reassigned to the Wranglers today and they did leave today on a road trip, which explains the timing of that move. And I think some people's reaction was, well, why bother? And yet I think the Flames took advantage of a really sort of unique opportunity with Anderson away, with some roster flexibility, because they still have guys on IR, to show Yan Kuznetsov that he's close and to get a sense of how he looks in an NHL practice. Like, you can't base everything on an NHL practice, but I would argue that sort of audition opportunity could be as valuable as a lot of Wranglers games.
Yep.
Like, and we know the Flames have liked what they've seen from Kuznetsov in Wranglers games so far this year, but a chance to see him in NHL practices, a chance to see him in those one-on-one drills against Matt Coronado or Nazem Kadri or whoever it happens to be, a chance to see him in those battle drills in the corner with a guy like Blake Coleman or somebody who's won all those battles at the NHL level. Like, it's just a really sort of insightful glimpse into just where he's at in his development. And I'm with you. I think he's not only emerged as the obvious candidate for the next defense call up, but I think Daniil Miramanov better be looking over his shoulder.
Agreed. I think it's the right call by Tyson Barrie to decide to go to the Wranglers and report there. I mean, I don't want to speak for somebody and their life and their career. I would say it's the right call if continuing the playing career is the way to go. If that's what Tyson Barrie wants to continue to do, if playing and trying to take a run at 1,000 NHL games and sticking around in the NHL, if that is the goal, then accepting the assignment to the Wranglers and going and playing there and being a positive force on the number one affiliate, I think that's your best bet because, yeah, you know, that gives you the opportunity to play 3, 4, 5, 6 games between now and the NHL trade deadline. And a Tyson Barrie playing games in the American League is going to be infinitely more attractive to another team than a Tyson Barrie sitting and watching and practicing with the NHL team being an eighth defenseman. And so if there is any type of chance for him to be acquired or moved before the NHL deadline, then I think going to play in the American League is the best way to go about it. It's the only place he's going to be making a $1.25 million, right, is to continue to play with the American League team. I think if that is the goal, I think this is the best call by Tyson. So I hope he goes down there and continues to be the guy that he's always been. Great dude in the locker room and a real positive force, and I think can absolutely help their blue line. And for a team that sometimes struggles to score, somebody who can help their power play like Tyson Barrie, I think, yeah, would be important for the Wranglers.
Yeah, and I don't want to be the guy with the bucket of cold water, but if you're listening to this and you think that they're going to be able to trade Tyson Barrie and recoup an asset, those feel like pretty slim chances to me. I'll be perfectly honest. Every team's looking for depth on defense, but they're looking for defensive depth that can defend. And that has not been a strong suit of Tyson Barrie through his career and certainly hasn't been, you know, the number, and I know plus minus can be a little misleading, but Tyson Barrie has been a minus in each of his last 5 NHL games. And so, you know, I don't think this is as simple as he goes and has 7 points in 6 games with the Wranglers and suddenly, you know, Craig Conroy's phone is ringing off the hook. And yet, I don't think it's a bad place for Tyson Barrie to be for multiple reasons. One, you have him as depth in your own system if you need it. You have him as a guy that you can bring up if you have injuries. Maybe you do make a trade. I talked lots about, you know, the impact that I think he can have around Hunter Brustevich and around Jeremy Poirier and around Joni Jurmo. Like, that you have some offensive minded young defensemen and even an Artem Grushnikov. Well, he's certainly not trying to play like Tyson Barrie. Same for Jan Kuznetsov. I think they can learn a lot from a guy who's played 800 and some NHL games. And so him being with the Wranglers is not a bad spot to be in that sense. And then, you know, Tyson Barrie, let's be real about it, is playing for a contract next, yeah, year somewhere. NHL, potentially in Europe, maybe take an AHL deal and look to, like, Tyson Barrie in my conversations with him is not pondering hanging him up at 33. He wants to keep going for a while and he needs to be playing. Yep. He needs an opportunity to show what he believes he's still capable of.
And also, this is so much better. Like, what if the Flames run into a rash of injuries on the blue line? And what if Tyson Barrie's playing well in the American League? all of a sudden, a guy who's finally, for the first time all season, been able to get a run of games in, then all of a sudden he becomes infinitely more of an option for the Flames to think about recalling him and putting him back into the NHL lineup. So from every metric, from every perspective, I think him going and joining the Wranglers is the way to go.
Yeah, and from an organizational standpoint, you simply can't have... It's one thing to carry eight defensemen, but one or two of them can't be just taking a seat.
Yeah.
They have to be candidates to go into the lineup, and I think with the way Ryan Huska and his coaching staff currently feel about what they're getting from Tyson Barrie, I just don't think he was a realistic candidate to be used very much at the NHL level. And so whether it's a Solovyov or someone else, you can put that spot to better use.
And just to wrap up the hour, not wrap up the hour, wrap up our segment before we hit the round table to wrap up the hour. This is really interesting. Just a little insight from the head coach on how Dustin Wolf might be used down the stretch. Eric Francis asked Ryan Huska a couple questions about Dustin Wolf and what type of workload he might see in the remaining 27 games.
Is it safe to say you'll be monitoring the workload of Dustin Wolf moving forward? Is that something you need to be very conscious of?
No, not for me. We need to find a way to get as many points as we can, and if that means we're going to play Dustin 15 in a row because he's having success, so be it. If Vladdy gets in and he gets hot and he plays 15 in a row, so be it. We're at the point where we need to find a way to get as many points as we can.
You didn't notice, see any fatigue down that last week or whatever. Like, people are looking at, you know, he lost three in a row, which is so rare.
Yeah.
Is it because he was getting tired?
Yeah, in my opinion, I don't. No. You know, there's always going to be goals that are going to go through him, and or someone's going to beat him when he's made that save before. But that's goaltending. I don't think it's got anything to do with him being fatigued, because we've talked before. He's used to playing back-to-backs and 3 and 4 nights. And he's a young guy. Like, I don't think I would give him that excuse.
So that's the head coach. I think it's safe to say that this is Dustin Wolf's net going into Sunday's game against San Jose. And if Wolf continues to perform the way he has, then we're probably going to see him pretty close to those numbers we talked about on Thursday, where, you know, we kind of ballpark 21-22 starts in the final 27. If Wolf lives up to his end of the bargain, I think you're going to see a ton of time between the pipes for him.
Yeah, if you're Dan Vladar and you hustled home from today's off-ice workout to catch the clip of the coach talking, you're probably not feeling super optimistic. It was very... inclusive comment from Ryan Huska to note that Dan Vladar could conceivably start 15 in a row too. But what I took away, and I think everyone takes away from that clip from Ryan Huska, is if Dustin Wolf is the hot hand, we're not going to hesitate to just keep going back to him. He's not playing 15 in a row. Dan Vladar, Mr. Second Half of back-to-backs, is certainly...
There's at least three.
Yeah.
Wolf's probably not playing.
Yeah. See you in Carolina and New York, I think, and Utah. Could be wrong on that.
I believe it's Utah.
But, yeah, it sure sounds like we could see a whole lot of Dustin Wolf down the stretch.
Wes Gilbertson, Pat Steinberg along with you. This hour of Flames Talk underway. Hey, can't find the latest episodes of your favorite HGTV, Discovery, and Food Network shows? Rogers Xfinity TV has the newest seasons of the top-rated shows on these popular channels, while other providers are no longer including them in their TV lineup. If your TV provider doesn't carry these channels, you're missing out on new seasons of Celebrity IOU, Hometown, Beat Bobby Flay, Expedition X, and more. Don't be fooled by other channels pretending to be these networks you know and love. Get the latest with Rogers Xfinity TV at Rogers.com.
Talking your team right now. Flames Talk is on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Daily Flames Roundtable time, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills, just minutes from the airport. It's Pat Steinberg, Wes Gilbertson, and now Derek Wills, voice of the Flames, joins us to complete our Friday Daily Flames Roundtable. And gents, the Four Nations face-off is officially done, and the Flames sent one player. Rasmus Anderson was the lone player to represent his country for the Calgary Flames. And now with the Four Nations face-off done, we are looking ahead to 1 year's time in the 2026 Winter Olympics in Milan, Italy. So now that we know that Rasmus Anderson has represented his country, now that we know that things went the way they did at the Four Nations face-off, and we've got a year of hockey until the next major best-on-best event, guys, what Flames players on top of Rasmus intrigue you that could be in the Olympic conversation? What's a few players that come to mind for you?
Well, the first guy for me is a guy who maybe should have been on Team Canada, and that's Mackenzie Weegar. I mean, I think if the NHL and the NHLPA learned anything, it's that you might need expanded rosters for the Olympics. Between the injury to Shea Theodore for Canada and Charlie McAvoy for the U.S. and who is eligible to potentially replace them and how close they had to be to Montreal or to Boston, and then the whole Quinn Hughes thing. I mean, I think teams are going to need at least to have 8 defensemen on their roster. Otherwise, we're going to run into the same issues at the Olympics that we did during the Four Nations face-off. So Mackenzie Weegar would be at the top of the list for me as far as guys who could have played at the Four Nations face-off is one of those four countries. But then you dig a little bit deeper, and I think it's safe to say that Yegor Sharangovich would represent Belarus. I mean, he broke the NHL record for most goals and points in a season by a Belarusian last season. So for me, he'd be a no-brainer. And then I wonder about Martin Pospisil. I know he would probably play a bottom six role for Slovakia, but he'd be another guy. And maybe a bit of a long shot, fellas, just because they're so deep at this position. But what about Dustin Wolf? If he continues to develop the way he has, I'm not suggesting he's going to start over Connor Hellebuck, but could he be one of the three goaltenders for the United States? I do wonder about that as well.
Let me start with Wolf, because that is a really interesting one for me. I wrote about the Flames' various candidates for 2026 Olympics, and the way I put it with Dustin Wolf is he's a long shot. But how many times have we called Dustin Wolf a long shot? And how many times has it turned out that we, maybe haven't been wrong about him being a long shot, but how many times has he turned that into doing whatever we weren't sure he could? And so the thing with Wolf, I know it's very popular for international teams to use that third goalie slot on the guy that they think might be their sort of answer in the future. And sure, Dustin Wolf in the middle of a Calder caliber campaign, I could see, Team USA thinking toward next year and saying, geez, he'll be, okay, so 2026, he's 24, he'll be 28 in 2030. Could he potentially be our starter? And I think he's absolutely got to be in the mix for that reason. And yet, what's maybe working against Dustin Wolf in that sense is that Jake Oettinger is only 26 years old. He was the backup for the Americans at the Four Nations. Jeremy Swayman, their third goalie at that event, is also 26. We're not talking about a country that's aging out all of its goaltenders right away. And so that's going to put Dustin Wolf in tough. I know, Wilsey, you mentioned Martin Pospisil would have to be more of a guy in a bottom six role for Slovakia at the Olympics, and I'm not sure that's the case. There's been four Slovak forwards play in the NHL this season. Four. And so those guys are all going to have key roles, and I'll tell you who that includes that a lot of Flames fans may not immediately be thinking of, and that's Sam Honzek. And so, not to leave Anderson or Weegar off my list, because I think they're strong candidates, but I'll just wrap up my thoughts and throw it over to Pat with Honzek. I think this could be a really good opportunity for the Flames and for a young player that they're really high on. Sam Honzek at 21 years old is going to have, whether he's in the NHL or still with the Wranglers, a really good opportunity to represent the Slovaks at the Olympics next season, alongside his buddy Martin Pospisil, maybe alongside Martin Pospisil's older brother Christian. Just a really sort of neat opportunity. It's going to be tough slugging there for the Slovaks, but the Flames do have a chance.
So now that we know that Rasmus Anderson has represented his country, now that we know that the things went the way they did at the Four Nations face-off, and we've got a year of hockey until the next major best-on-best event. Guys, what Flames players on top of Rasmus intrigue you that could be in the Olympic conversation? What's a few players that come to mind for you?
Well, the first guy for me is a guy who maybe should have been on Team Canada, and that's Mackenzie Weegar. I mean, I think if the NHL and the NHLPA learned anything, it's that you might need expanded rosters for the Olympics. Between the injury to Shea Theodore for Canada and Charlie McAvoy for the U.S., and you know, who is eligible to potentially replace them, and how close they had to be to Montreal or to Boston, and then the whole Quinn Hughes thing. I mean, I think teams are going to need at least to have 8 defensemen on their roster. Otherwise, we're going to run into the same issues at the Olympics that we did during the Four Nations face-off. So Mackenzie Weegar would be at the top of the list for me as far as, you know, guys who could have played at the Four Nations face-off is one of those four countries. But then you dig a little bit deeper, and I think it's safe to say that Yegor Sharangovich would represent Belarus. I mean, he broke the NHL record for most goals and points in a season by a Belarusian last season. So for me, he'd be a no-brainer. And then I wonder about Martin Pospisil. I know we would probably play a bottom six role for Slovakia, but you know, he'd be another guy, and maybe a bit of a long shot, fellas, just because, you know, they're so deep at this position. But what about Dustin Wolf? You know, if he continues to develop the way he has, I'm not suggesting he's going to start over Connor Hellebuck, but could he be one of the three goaltenders for the United States? I do wonder about that as well.
Let me start with Wolf, because that is a really interesting one for me. I wrote about the Flames' various candidates for 2026 Olympics, and the way I put it with Dustin Wolf is he's a long shot. But how many times have we called Dustin Wolf a long shot? And how many times has it turned out that we, you know, maybe haven't been wrong about him being a long shot, but how many times has he turned that into doing whatever we weren't sure he could? And so the thing with Wolf, like, I know it's very popular for international teams to use that third goalie slot on the guy that they think might be their sort of answer in the future. And Dustin Wolf in the middle of a Calder caliber campaign, I could see, you know, Team USA thinking toward next year and saying, geez, you know, he'll be, okay, so 2026, he's 24, he'll be 28 in 2030. Could he potentially be our starter? And I think he's absolutely got to be in the mix for that reason. And yet, what's maybe working against Dustin Wolf in that sense is that Jake Oettinger is only 26 years old. He was the backup for the Americans at the Four Nations. Jeremy Swayman, their third goalie at that event, is also 26. Like, we're not talking about a country that's aging out all of its goaltenders right away. And so that's going to put Dustin Wolf in tough. I know, Wilsey, you mentioned Martin Pospisil would have to be more of a guy in a bottom six role for Slovakia at the Olympics. And I'm not sure that's the case. There's been four Slovak forwards play in the NHL this season. Four. And so those guys are all going to have key roles. And I'll tell you who that includes that a lot of Flames fans may not immediately be thinking of, and that's Sam Honzek. And so, not to leave Anderson or Weegar off my list, because I think they're strong candidates, but I'll just wrap up my thoughts and throw it over to Pat with Honzek. I think this could be a really good opportunity for the Flames and for a young player that they're really high on. You know, Sam Honzek at 21 years old is going to have, whether he's in the NHL or still with the Wranglers, a really good opportunity to represent the Slovaks at the Olympics next season alongside his buddy Martin Pospisil, maybe alongside Martin Pospisil's older brother Christian. Just a really sort of neat opportunity. It's going to be tough slugging there for the Slovaks, but the Flames do have a chance to have two guys playing, I would say, fairly significant roles.
Yeah, I mean, the first thing is that because it is the Olympics, the rosters are expanded. I think maybe one of the biggest things that the NHL, this is like the Olympics, the NHL is going to be far more involved in terms of being able to monetize and market and so on and so forth than they have in the past, but it's still a double IHF event, whereas the World Cup of Hockey, Four Nations Face-Off, NHL, NHLPA event. And so I think the NHL and the PA can look back and say, okay, you know, we probably got a little weird with the rosters for this thing. You know, when we do the 2028 World Cup of Hockey, we'll make it a little less weird and just make it a little, we'll just use a little bit more common sense so that some of the weirdness with Quinn Hughes and Thomas Harley and, well, Cale Makar must be sick and you can watch Morning Skate, but you can't, no, you, how dare you be on the, it was silliness. So I think that they can work some of those things out for the 2028 World Cup, but I believe Olympic rosters are expanded to begin with. Like Canada brought 8 defensemen to 2014, the last time there was an NHL participation. So that with them, I believe having 25 player rosters, I think that gives you just a little bit more flexibility so the weirdness doesn't happen. And then as Wes and I were talking about, potentially even a taxi squad, which they've done before, gives you a little bit more flexibility so that it doesn't get silly. Anyway, I digress. The players that I'm most intrigued in from a Flames standpoint are Dustin Wolf. And I do think long shot, because I hate to say it, the two nations right now that would be at the top of goaltending supremacy, one of them is the United States. I mean, they have turned into an elite goaltending factory, and that is a little scary right now.
Is your second one Russia?
The other one's Russia. Yeah, okay. And we don't know. The reason why I don't bring them up, because we have no idea whether or not Russia is going to be in the Olympics. Belarus is not going to be, because they didn't get through the qualifying. Russia won't, we don't know in terms of whether they'll be able to play or not, because there's still the whole geopolitical thing, and we'll see how that plays itself out ahead of the Olympics. But Dustin Wolf is one of them. And what if they, you know, Canada's done some really interesting things with their third goaltenders in the past. Would the United States think about bringing Wolf as a number three along with Hellebuck and Ottinger, or Hellebuck and Swayman, or whatever, Hellebuck and Demko? You know, whatever they decide to do, would they think about bringing Wolf as a number three just for the experience, knowing that best on best is now going to be a thing again? You know, could that be a really good learning experience for, what, a 24-year-old Dustin Wolf? So that would be one. And the other one is Hanzek, guys. And I think that that one kind of flies a little under the radar because he is in the American League right now. But I think Hanzek and Pospisil are almost shoo-ins to be on the Slovakian team for the Olympics. And, you know, all of a sudden, Sam Hanzek, who is a very highly skilled player, and now on an Olympic stage, every year there's one of those countries. Every year at the Olympics, there's one of those countries, whether it's Latvia or Slovenia or whoever it ends up being, that you're like, oh, geez, they had a really, really good tournament, and somebody really jumps off the page. With Hanzek's skill and talent, he really intrigues me as well. So I would say Hanzek and Wolf would be the two for me, guys. It is our Daily Flames Roundtable. Derek Wills, Wes Gilbertson, Pat Steinberg, along with you on this Friday edition of the Roundtable. So let's go from that to the rest of the season for the Flames, gents. Seven games until we get to the trade deadline. 2 weeks from when we're talking right now is trade deadline 2025. One game at home, then 6 straight on the road. But before they can focus on that road trip, and boy, Ryan Huska, the head coach, has been really adamant about making sure he's not looking past Sunday against San Jose, and I think that is by design, so that there's no way the players start talking about that either.
Ask him about the road trip at your own peril.
Exactly. Guys, it starts with a home game Sunday against San Jose. How crucial does Sunday's game against the Sharks feel, knowing where the Flames sit, and then we can look ahead to a road trip, because then they've got 6 really tough games on the road?
Yeah, I mean, Ryan Huska has certainly gone out of his way to avoid any questions about what is a 6-game gauntlet coming up after this home game against the Sharks on Sunday. And I think one of the reasons why is that in the back of his mind, or maybe in the front of his mind, he's a little bit concerned that his players might be looking ahead to the longest road trip of the season, where you're going to play some of the top teams in the league and, you know, teams that have won Stanley Cups. So you can't look past the Sharks. The Sharks, once again, are a rebuilding team. They're going to probably have a top 5 pick, and With that said, I also think that with the talent they have, certainly Macklin Celebrini and Will Smith and others, they're a team that you've got to be careful with, because if you don't play the right way, then I think they can get you. So it's a game that I wouldn't call a must win, because there's 27 games to go in the season, but it does feel like one of those can't lose games. You've been struggling at home, which Scotiabank Saddledome has been a really friendly spot for the Flames this season until recently. But you got swept on that three-game homestand before the Four Nations break, and those were some pretty important points you left on the table. Now, I would say of the three games you played, two of them on paper, you probably shouldn't have won, but you would argue that that game against the Red Wings is one that you could have won, if not should have won then. So you've got to get this one against the Sharks. I think it would be a great way to start a really important seven-game stretch for the team. And if you could win that one and even go 500 on that six-game road trip, then I think you put yourself in a spot where you're still fighting for a playoff spot when you come home.
Yeah, guys, I'm kind of looking at this San Jose game combined with that six-game slobber knocker of a road trip as a best-of-seven series in sort of its own way. And I think to hang around the playoff race, and they're currently 3 points back of the Vancouver Canucks, who have some tough and some not so tough opponents on their upcoming schedule. I think the Flames from that best of seven that I'm referring to it as probably need 7 or 8 points. Like I think they need to get through that stretch. I think they need to tread water at about 500 through that seven games. I think 8 points is probably actually the number that I would more put on it, which is, you know, the equivalent of 4 wins, however you come up with those points. And when I look at the other opponents from Washington to Tampa to Florida to Carolina to an emotional night in Philly and to Dallas, it's hard to figure out where you're getting those 7 or 8 points, right? That's going to be a big ask on that trip. And so while San Jose at home on Sunday might not technically be a must-win game, I think if you look at that bigger picture and say we need 7 or 8 points out of this best-of-seven series,
yeah,
you better get two against the San Jose Sharks, or you're really adding the pressure to what is always or already, I'm sorry, just a total... I love the word Nazem Kadri used today, right? It's a gauntlet.
Yeah. It's and guys, it's one of those... It's one of those games where in years past, I think, you know, Willsey, we'd be talking about it being like, oh, could that be a trap game? You know, first game back out of a long break and a team lower than them in the standings. But I will say the Flames have kind of bucked that trend that we've kind of gotten used to over the last couple of years of them continuously playing down to teams well below them in the standings for the most part. Like that loss to Seattle going into the break was kind of the rarity, right? Like they've done a very good job this year of taking care of business against teams below them in the standings. And it's been a little bit more of a different story when it comes to teams above them. But, you know, a good chunk of their points this year have come against teams like Nashville and Chicago and San Jose and Anaheim. So I'm feeling actually pretty decent about it. I've liked the focus and I've liked the intensity and the work ethic we've seen from them in the first 3 days of practice after the break. So I'm feeling pretty good about the game on Sunday. And I think you get the sense that they look at it as a really important game. Like they need these 2 points before the gauntlet begins. And that also, I think, bodes well. So I think it is a huge game. This is a massive, massive kind of pivot point in the season, guys. And when I think about it, I think to myself how this might impact their trade deadline plans. Like, I don't think they're at any point going to be a big time buyer. I think we're all on the same page there. But like, if this road trip goes really poorly and all of a sudden they get into the final stretch and now they're looking up at 6 or 7 points back of a playoff spot, which I'm not convinced is going to happen, but it could. If that all of a sudden ends up happening, I think Craig Conroy's mindset's a little bit different in terms of what he might do in 2 weeks' time and the type of tack he might take going into the trade deadline, and perhaps some players who might have been off the table if they're tied or holding down a playoff spot, might be a little bit more on the table, or he might be a little more willing to listen on. So I think it's a very crucial next seven games. I love the fact that it is seven games, so Wes can use the best of seven analogy, and can you get four out of seven? That'd be huge coming out of this gauntlet. It'll keep you at the very worst in the mix in this Western Conference playoff race. So, yeah, I think it's a huge stretch, and that game on Sunday looms very, very large. But, Wilsey, I'm feeling pretty good about where the Flames are going into that game on Sunday.
Yeah, I am as well. They're rested, and you could tell they were a tired team prior to the Four Nations break. You've got Dustin Wolf playing against his hometown team, the Sharks, presumably. And, you know, he'll be motivated, and he's played really well against them in the past. And I really think that with the additions of Joel Farabee and Morgan Frost, and I know they played some games for the Flames before the Four Nations break, but they didn't even practice with the team once prior to this week. So they're going to feel more settled off the ice, I think more comfortable on the ice. And then you also add a top six, top nine forward in Connor Zeri and a top pairing, or at least a top four defenseman in Kevin Ball. So I think that on paper, the team that we're going to see Sunday night at Scotiabank Saddledome will be the best Flames team we've seen so far in this 2024-2025 season on paper. So it's a game that on the ice they should win, but you know what they say. On any given Sunday.
We haven't even mentioned the Walker Dewar revenge game yet.
I did not think about that, but that is true. It'll be Walker Dewar's return to the Scotiabank Saddledome.
Last spotted in the Flames locker room, calling in a teasing manner, Dustin Wolf, the mayor of Calgary.
Okay.
I hope that's not too political for the text line.
Well, that's a good way to wrap it up. See you at practice on Saturday morning. Thank you, Wilsey.
Have a good weekend, everybody.
He's Derek Wills. He's Wes Gilbertson. My name is Pat Steinberg, and that'll start to wrap us up this hour on Flames Talk. Thanks to Shan Vergie. Thanks to Cam Hughes, our outstanding producers this hour. And that'll wrap us up on the Daily Flames Roundtable. Brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills just minutes from the airport.